head to the hotline, joined by Chris Turnage. Chris, straight back from Indianapolis in the NFL Combine. Chris, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're doing good. We're doing good. So how was Indy this time of year?
Man, it was funny. You know, right when the weather starts warming up in Arkansas, I leave and go back up, trade it for the 30-degree and snow of Indy. But other than that, it was good. It was a good combine and had a lot of interesting prospects there. So a fun time.
What were the – okay, go ahead, Trey.
Well, I was going to say, Chris, you're getting some newspaper time in the state of Tennessee today after your comments on former Vanderbilt wide receiver and your client, Chris Boyd.
Yeah, you know, Chris is a great kid and was caught up a little bit in the rape situation there at Vanderbilt. He wasn't involved in the actual rape itself, but kind of an after-the-fact deal and wrong place at the wrong time. But he's been kind of followed pretty closely by especially those in Nashville. And Chris had a fourth-round grade last year as a redshirt sophomore. He's 6'4 and a half, and some of you Arkansas fans might remember his only fumble actually came against Arkansas that year that we played him. I think Jerry Franklin returned it, or it was one going to the end zone, somewhere like that. So that was his only fumble of his career, but he's a great prospect, and certainly the Nashville media has been following this story a lot. So,
Could you, real quick, because some of the big talk was the top three quarterbacks that – were there Manziel, Bridgewater, and Bortles. And
right.
How would you rank those three guys, and do you think all three of those guys are top 10 picks? But if you were to say put those three quarterbacks in order from first, second, third, what would be your way from – and what did you hear, I guess, from some of the guys there about those three?
Yeah, you know, that was an interesting kind of deal because all three came in and each one of them had a different strategy at the combine. Blake Bortles basically did everything. He threw, he did the drills, ran, and everything. Teddy Bridgewater didn't do anything on the other side. He said he's going to wait till his pro day. And then Johnny Manziel kind of did a hybrid. He ran and did a few things but didn't throw there at the combine. And so it was a different strategy by each one of the three. I can tell you, me personally, I really like Blake Bortles. If you see him in person, he's got a big frame. He's got a good arm. I spoke to him for about 5 minutes. Very intelligent, very personable kid, and he seemed like a really good guy you could build a franchise around. Manziel is very, very special. I mean, he's one of the most electrifying college players I've seen. I'll be honest, I don't know how he's going to translate NFL, and that's kind of the big question. Even the NFL guys are up in the air on him and say, "Hey, we honestly don't know if he's going to translate well or if he's not." You know, if you remember, Manziel struggled against LSU's defense, who really contained him in the pocket and didn't let him escape. And that's what, you know, they say NFL teams would try to do to him. And so that's going to be an interesting situation. And then, you know, with Bridgewater, some people say he's the most NFL-ready right now at this point between those three. And I'll tell you who really, in my mind, holds the key to kind of how the draft will fall is the St. Louis Rams. At number two. Right now they're saying, you know, they're happy with Sam Bradford. And, you know, if they trade down or if they decide to take a quarterback at two, then everything else can make the dominoes fall. And I do think you'll see those three quarterbacks end up being all top 10 picks. You know, when you got so many teams, Jacksonville, Cleveland, the Raiders, even Houston. So it's going to be interesting to see. I'll tell you right now, too, if the draft were today, based on who I talked to with Houston, they would take Jadeveon Clowney, number one, if it were today. Now, there's a lot of time now, and you know, Bill O'Brien loves quarterbacks coming from New England and being Tom Brady's quarterback coach. But if he doesn't feel like, you know, one of those guys is a franchise guy, then that's probably who they're going to end up taking is Jadeveon Clowney.
And I'm with you because if you are a quarterback guru, why waste it? If one of these guys you don't think is really that guy and you can get value later rounds – then take the best player available, which I think is Jadeveon Clowney. I was going to tell you that I thought Manziel, to me, he's Michael Vick. I was trying to think who Bridgewater compared to and who you thought. But I thought Bortles, to me, compares like a Joe Flacco, a bigger frame kid that can't make all the throws. He's not that elusive, but he can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I think that's a great comparison. I mean, Bortles is a you know, big kid. He's not going to take off and run for 30 yards on anybody, but he can make all the throws. He can make, you know, the out throw, the deep throws. and got a big arm on him. You know, I see Teddy Bridgewater maybe as a he kind of reminds me, honestly, of like Tre'Varius Jackson a little bit, because he can move around and have some wheels, and he can, you know, make some throws, not the flashiest type of guy. Now, Bridgewater might not like that comparison, but that kind of jumped out at me, just their body frame and their style a little bit.
Right.
And so that was kind of interesting. Like I said, the thing that's really unique about these guys, you know, teams actually were saying, you know, man, we really want to see him throw. We'd like to see him compete. Even if they're, you know, they know their receivers aren't there. They know they might not complete 100% of the passes, but a lot of the teams are saying, man, I'd rather have a guy that could come and compete, you know, and so we can see him in person. But each one of the three took a different strategy of that approach, so we'll see kind of how it plays out, you know, here in May.
Hey, Chris, when Jadeveon Clowney ran his 40-yard dash, and obviously it wasn't official until after, you know, the time was posted 4.53 for his official 40, was there a buzz there around Lucas Oil Stadium?
Absolutely. There was a buzz. I mean, it was crazy because even right before he was going to go, everybody was like, hey, Clowney's about to run. I mean, it was almost like, you know, little kids running up to the fence and watching, you know, Mark McGwire hit when he's hit for the home runs. Everybody just all of a sudden just gravitated there. And so there was definitely a buzz. And then, you know, when he ran his unofficial 4.4, whatever it was, and then his official time came out, there was certainly a buzz to that. You know, but what's interesting is Chris Smith ran a pretty similar time than what Clowney did. Now, obviously, he's a little smaller, but he ran, you know, fairly similar, and there wasn't hardly any talk about that, at least in the media world, about Chris Smith. So that was kind of an interesting deal as well.
And talk about the other things that Chris Smith did well there.
You know, he did a lot of things well. He benched. I think he was in the top five in bench, so he showed off some impressive strength. He ran a good 40. His shuttle was great. You know, a lot of the teams that I talked to there, they think he's going to be a second or third round guy, despite his height. You know, we talked about after the Senior Bowl, some people were a little down on his height and a little concerned about that. But he can go get the quarterback, and that's kind of what they want, especially if you're in division against Peyton Manning, and division against Andrew Luck, and division against Tom Brady. You got to have those guys go after the QB. You know, if you remember when Manning was with Indy, that's kind of why Houston took Mario Williams first, what they did, because every team in that division was building to stop Manning. And so that's kind of what teams see Chris Smith as, a guy that can get in and go after the quarterback, you know, with speed and technique. So I think he definitely helped himself at the combine.
And talk about some of the kids like a Dree Archer, a Henry Josie, and a Tyler Gaffney. Now, Tyler Gaffney from Stanford, Henry Josie, if it's Josie.
Josie from Missouri,
yes.
Yeah.
And then a guy that nobody really knows about, ran a great time, and then also compare them to the kid from Oregon, DeAnthony Thomas, that I thought, you know, Chris, if we would have talked before the combine, I would have told you that he would have been probably in the top 3-4 guys as far as fastest 40 times, and he wasn't in the top 10 of running back 40
times.
Yeah,
he ended up like at a 4.55, I think, or something like that. And he was one of the biggest disappointments of the combine and one of the biggest losers. Well, him and Michael Sam were right up there together as far as, you know, disappointments, because, again, everybody was kind of like you, Matt. Everybody thought that DeAnthony Thomas was going to be a 4.3 guy and, you know, maybe challenge the record. And he came out and ran a 4.55. And at his size, you know, that's not very impressive. And he probably is going to drop, you know, a couple rounds. But he's still an explosive weapon. But when you see a guy that's, you know, 5'9", 165, 170, and he's supposed to be known for his speed, and he doesn't, it tells you either, A, he hadn't been working out like he's supposed to be, or B, he's just not as fast as we thought he was, and it was all scheme. So that gave some NFL teams some concern. You know, interesting with Dree Archer, the kid from Kent State, there was a lot of talk there in Indy about him being the fastest kid. And, of course, he almost broke Chris Johnson's record for those that were keeping up. But what was really interesting was Adidas, they have a cleat called the Addy Zero, which is a very light cleat. And they were giving away $100,000 to the guy that ran the fastest 40 wearing their cleat. And they have an Adidas suite there, and Snoop Dogg was in the Adidas suite wearing a Johnny Manziel jersey. And they had literally $100,000 stacked in cash there in the corner.
Wow.
And So Dre Archer was kicking himself because he didn't run in it. He didn't run in the Addy Zero, so he would have got $100,000 in cash had he done that. The guy that won that was Brandon Cooks from Oregon State. And so he literally walked up to the suite, and they gave him $100,000 in a suitcase, and he walked back away with it. So that was kind of a nice little bonus for him. But, you know, Dre Archer is going to compare to Chris Johnson. That's his game. He's not going to be a power runner, but very, very similar to Chris in his running style and obviously his speed. And then Henry Josie from Missouri kind of surprised a few people, you know, based on what he did. I see him as a fourth, fifth round type kid. And like I said, the Anthony Thomas is probably hurt himself quite a bit because of that. So certainly some red flags now came up about him.
And you had Trey Mason, who left early. I was going to get your thoughts on, is it the right move? I believe, Chris, that was there over 100 underclassmen that are entering this draft? How do you see that playing out? A guy like a Trey Mason who really kind of exploded on, I guess, the last 6, 7, 8 games. But do you think maybe some of these underclassmen made some mistakes?
Yeah, you know, this was a record ever. There was 104 underclassmen to declare for the draft. And the previous high was last year. It was 70-something. So you can see the amount of increase there. And only 80 of those 104 got invited to the combine. So you've got 24 underclassmen who declared and didn't even get invited to the combine, which is a huge negative for those guys. If you can't make it there as an underclassman, certainly they should have probably stayed in. But as far as, you know, the overall class, you probably heard on TV, this is the deepest draft in a long, long time. And a lot of teams are saying that, meaning, you know, you're going to be able to get really good talent in the 5th, 6th, and 7th round. And it's because of so many underclassmen are out there. And they don't know if that trend is going to continue or what. But as far as Trey Mason, you know, it's funny, you're exactly right. Nobody was talking about him this time last year. Nobody was talking about him at the first part of the season. In the last 7, 8 games, you know, he came out and exploded. And people are saying, you know, they see him as a third-round pick, maybe second-round pick, but third probably. But the trend, as you've seen over the last few years, is running backs, they don't get drafted. Many of them don't get drafted in the first round anymore or even the second round. And so you start seeing that wave of running backs really pick up in the third, fourth. He's a kid, again, that the team's question, hey, is it really the scheme? Is it Malvon's scheme? Or right, can he be successful in the NFL? And that was the big question mark. And I think that's why you're not going to see anybody jump out there on him, you know, too early. And like I said, probably take a third, fourth round pick.
And Chris, from what I'm hearing, most of the, and you were there, it's tough now for running backs to go. You know, 10 years ago, you would have 2, 3 running backs in the top 6 get picked.
Right.
I remember a couple years ago, I think you had Ronnie Brown, Cadillac Williams, and Cedric Benson, I think, that went like 2, 3, 5 or something like that.
They were all top 5 picks.
And you're just not going to see that as much anymore.
Absolutely. People, you know, like we talked about once before, Alfred Morris goes to the 6th round of the Redskins and, you know, has 2,000-yard seasons. You can always pick up those running backs in the late rounds now, and teams feel like because it is a passing league that as long as they're okay, as long as they can get the job done a little bit, that you don't have to spend that first round. There'll be one or two, you know, go in the first round, but where compared to, like you said, a couple years ago, you had 3 going to top 5, so it's an interesting trend. And speaking of running backs, did you guys hear about the San Diego State running back?
I did.
Left the combine?
Yeah.
Left because God told him to, and now they can't find him.
Yeah, it was, you know, there was actually a lot of buzz about that. I mean, if I were his agent, I probably would have passed out because literally, you know, you do the drills the last day. You'll do the bench the next to last day, and then you go out and do your field work on the last day, and then you leave right after your field work. And he did the bench press and then literally just went and got a ticket and left the morning he was supposed to be doing drills and field work. And at first everybody's like, hey, where is Adam Buena, you know? And then all of a sudden the story came out that he left because it said God told him to, because if he did, he'd play for Seattle Seahawks. And that's a dream team. And so it's kind of interesting because, you know, probably no other team is going to take this kid now because they're thinking, hey, if I take him, he's just going to leave, and, you know, because he wants to play for Seattle so bad. And now he's kind of disappeared. So that's been the most interesting story out of the combine in a while, I think.
And how bad does he just – I mean – I know to leave like that, it doesn't hurt you as bad as saying, hey, the only team I want to play for is Seattle, because then Seattle doesn't have to draft you.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I think I could definitely see him now as a kid. I mean, he was a late round guy, you know, fifth to seventh round guy anyways, but I could see Seattle saying, well, hey, we can just sign him as a free agent, and because nobody else is going to draft this kid. And, you know, so I don't think you'll see him get drafted at all, and especially with some of the other stuff coming out.
Let's go to Chad in Hot Springs. Chad, welcome to Overtime.
Hey, what's up, guys? I just wanted to get Chris's take on maybe what he's hearing about Mallett and the possibility of, you know, the Patriots trading him off for future picks, or kind of what's going on with Mallett these days.
All right. Thank you, Chad. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, there was a real interesting thing with Mallett. When Michael Lombardi was the GM at Cleveland, he loved Mallett. He was very, very high on Mallett and was going to try to trade for him. Well, since then, Lombardi got fired and is now working for the Patriots again. And so I don't know if Cleveland is as hot on Mallett like they were, but I think that deal was going to happen at one point when Lombardi was there. You know, I think New England's philosophy is, hey, anybody's up for sale pretty much. Anybody's up for trade, and we're willing to trade Mallett, but you better bring us a first-round pick in order to do so. And so I think, you know, New England is prepared to re-up Mallett's contract if they don't get what they want. You know, Belichick and those guys have learned to stand pretty fast and say, hey, if we get what we want, we'll trade him. And so what I hear is that they'll trade him, but they got to have a first-round pick in order to trade him. And so if a team comes up and ponies up with that, you know, then it might happen. There's been rumors, too, that Bill O'Brien, you know, who was in New England prior to going to Penn State and was the quarterback's coach, that Bill O'Brien might try to make a run for him, and then they could draft Clowney first and then trade away next year's first-round pick for, you know, Mallett. So that could kind of be a telltale sign if his old quarterback coach wants to go to bat for him and really likes him, or if he decides to back off, then maybe that's going to send some other signals to other teams that, hey, his own quarterback coach doesn't even want him. So it'll be interesting to follow, but I can tell you they will trade him if the price is right.
Let's head to Everett in The Rock. Everett, welcome to Overtime.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I was calling about, I heard, I think Matt say Manziel is kind of like Vic. But what did Manziel run? Didn't he run like a 4.5 something?
I think it was he's not as fast as Vic, but that's who I – you know, when you compare guys, his elusiveness, his lack of pocket presence but he can make all the throws, I see him – that's who I compare him to. Maybe Chris has somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Vic is a guy that's going to – you know, run more, and at least early on in his career as far as design runs. But I could definitely see the comparison as far as elusiveness, making the throws. I don't think he's a Russell Wilson because I don't think he has that type of game control during the game. But that's probably a pretty good comparison. You know, and Vic certainly started staying in the pocket more after his second and third year because he learned he couldn't do that. He learned he couldn't get out all the time. And so I agree. Now, Vic is faster. There's no question. But I can see that comparison, and it's interesting. I talked with Adrian Hubbard, the linebacker for Alabama. He was number 42 for Bama, and he was actually the guy that tried to tackle Manziel last year, you know, when Manziel threw the ball up in the air and then caught it himself and made the touchdown pass. He was the guy trying to tackle him, and Adrian Hubbard said, Manziel is by far the slipperiest dude I've ever tried to tackle in my entire career. He's like, you think you have him, and then he just disappears out of your hand. And so – I mean, that's pretty high praise from an Alabama player.
Yeah, but the thing with me is, man, if he's just running a 4.5 and you got Jadeveon Clowney running a 4.5, he's going to have that 4.3 speed like Vic to have an edge, man. You need an edge in the NFL. Not that I've ever been, but I think you're going to have an edge. Somewhere you're going to have an edge. And if he's not that sub 4.4 or 4.5 guy, he may be in a little bit of trouble. And I think Vic can spin that ball about 70 yards. I guess Manziel is pretty close to that, but that's all I got, man. I think I love him. I think he's a good player, but I just don't know.
Everett, thanks. Appreciate the call. Chris, we appreciate it, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good afternoon. You can go get some golf in with the nice weather now.
I hear you.
Yeah, it needs to warm up a little bit.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, have a good one.